Happy Friday night. It's the Fan pregame, the last thing staying between you and the weekend. Live it up. We're here for an hour and a half. We're going to tee up a lot going on tonight. We will be teeing up the Lakers in town for their, I guess, brawny tour throughout.
Yeah, the LeBron Circus, I think we call it. I guess it would be the Bron Circus.
Yeah.
They're both LeBrons, though.
They're both here, too, I believe.
Yes.
We'll see.
Yes.
We'll go over to radio only at 7 o'clock for the pregame before tip tonight. It's on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We've got some NHL action on tonight. There was some daytime NHL action. And we're going to talk to Shayna Goldman of The Athletic around 6 o'clock for that. And then it's, let me make sure I get the name right, UFC Fight Night Edmonton tomorrow.
It is.
So our Bronny, Aaron Bronstetter will join us.
LeBronstetter.
And last time this happened was a bit of a chaotic one when he was during interview time, remember?
Yes. So we get Bronstetter ahead of most major cards, and this would be a major card for at least the Canadian audience because it's in Edmonton this weekend, but he doesn't travel to every major card. He's traveling this week. He's in Edmonton. Last time we had him basically conducting interviews on the fly. So we'll see who's there
in
Edmonton.
We're hoping it happens again.
There might just be like a litany of fighters ready to grace us on our show. So we'll see what happens with Bronstetter from Edmonton at 6:30.
All right. So jam-packed for the next hour and a half. And we're discussing what is kind of like a changing of the seasons. Well, happy November to everybody. A changing of where our focus lies. Obviously, MLB offseason's already kicking off. We're seeing trades. We're seeing people deciding that they want to go into free agency. But we're going to eliminate the MLB from this next question and this next...
Yeah, it's time to move on.
This practice we're going to do. And our text line, we're going to take it for you. You can send it to us at 590-590. What's the most interesting team in sports right now? And interesting can mean you love watching them play. They have really great style, they're charismatic, dynamic, or can be they're a tire fire. They're interesting because they might be on the verge of collapse. So you can send it to us and give us a reason why they're the most interesting sport or team across sports. And we're going to eliminate the MLB from this just because they're not playing, even though there's some interesting off story.
Yeah, there is for sure. We'll be tracking the off season. We're tracking the parade and the shenanigans there with the Dodgers, who are celebrating a World Series
championship. Obviously, the Yankees are interesting. Obviously,
Blue Jays are interesting. There are a lot of interesting things will happen, but we are talking about the sports that are happening in the here and now. And we've refocused our attention because, yeah, the World Series is now over. So what else is going around sports?
So we're gonna draft. We're just gonna go. And
I believe you gave yourself first pick because I didn't wear a costume yesterday.
I did give myself
first
pick.
Interesting way to make the rules, but go ahead.
I am younger and
Now we're doing age.
Yeah. And I wore a costume yesterday. So I just get first pick. And there's a lot. And I realized while I was doing this practice that a lot of the teams that I find are most interesting are disasters. And so I don't know what that says about me, but my first overall pick for the most interesting team across sports right now is the Boston Bruins.
Okay.
Yep.
High on my list, too. I think that's a good pick.
Okay, and this is great because we're going to talk to Shayna in about 10 minutes. This is like a real collapse. This is maybe the end of an era that we're witnessing. They are in last place in the Atlantic tide, but last, if you look at the standings, they're the very last team. I've never seen that before. Minus 13 goal differential. They are 4-6-1. They lost 8-2 last night. You ate to see it.
Very nice.
You like that? And I think we could be witnessing the end of an era. They had so much off-season drama with the Swayman stuff, and then there was discussions with Marchand and his coach. And I actually think like Montgomery might be, is he on the hot seat? Is he the coach that might get fired first? Like just so many things about what the Boston Bruins are doing right now that is not typical of them, which is nice as a Leafs fan to watch and watch the downfall of times. And so I'm putting them to the top of my most interesting teams list. When they're on, I want to know what is going on.
Yeah, it's a good pick. It's the hottest seat in hockey, I think, belongs to Jim Montgomery. Does not have a contract beyond this season. The Bruins are getting, they're not just losing, they're getting embarrassed, as you mentioned last night, 8-2 versus the Carolina Hurricanes. If it wasn't for that victory in overtime over the Leafs, like this is maybe even more inflammatory than it seems. Yeah, Bruins culture. Bruins culture was a thing. Bruins culture meant something for a very long time. When Patrice Bergeron was there, Zdeno Chara was there, they seemed in many ways bulletproof, at least in that regard. But ever since, not the departure of Patrice Bergeron,
things
have been different since the departure of Patrice Bergeron, and they've been lacking in that regard, it seems, big time this year in terms of their identity, what they bring to the table over and over again every single night. The Bruins seem like they're not the Bruins right now, which makes them unbelievably interesting. I think that's a great pick.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate your vote of confidence. Now, your first overall pick for the most interesting team across sports is?
I think it's the Baltimore Ravens.
Wow.
Baltimore Ravens are my most interesting team in sports right now. They're the best watch in the NFL. They've scored the most points this year, bottom 10 in points allowed. So if you're just looking for the most entertaining football game every weekend, it's likely going to involve the Baltimore Ravens. They got the best player in football right now in Lamar Jackson. They got the best offensive player in football, at least non-quarterback, in Derrick Henry. They just traded for a wide receiver. They are loading up, and that's because they have unfinished business with the Kansas City Chiefs. Lost to them in the AFC title game last year. Lost to them in the first game of this season, despite throwing and landing a haymaker, I thought, on the Chiefs. A very competitive game that seems like they are destined, at least in my mind, for a rematch in the AFC title game, or at least a very, very competitive postseason game. It just feels like if I'm looking at the future and what people are going to be talking about the most when it comes to legacy stakes and the defining moment of the NFL season, I think it's going to involve maybe another MVP in Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens. I think they are the most interesting team in sports right now, now that we've got the World Series out of the way.
Okay, I think I have them in my, like, my pile of teams, but my most interesting NFL team is who I'll draft next. And it's, again, more of like a disastrous view, but
okay.
I think, unfortunately, we've been force-fed to watch a lot of Jets games.
Really? Jets. They interest you?
Yes. Let me tell you why they interest me.
I didn't watch a single snap last night because I'm so uninterested.
This isn't that I think that their game,
in the New York
that
Jets.
Their style is interesting, or that I'm excited to watch them play, but I'm excited to watch, to find out how the roller coaster goes. The chaos of Rodgers, their preseason expectations. They have their coach fired. Then they bring in Adams, and they've been terrible. And last night, they find, you know, a way to keep you hoping in a sense. They're 3-6. They give themselves that hope. And I think it's the hope that kills you. And I think that that is why I think they're a very interesting team. Obviously, I have friends that are Jets fans and they get sucked back in and then they get devastated. And so I think they're interesting just because of what this means for Aaron Rodgers. Is he going, people are saying he might even retire before the end of the season. Like, I don't think this is an interesting team to watch per se, but I think it's an interesting team to find out what happens to them, where the story goes. This has been such a disappointment, this entire Aaron Rodgers era. How does he get out of it? Like, is there something, is there like a phantom injury? Like, there's so many ways that this could go for the Jets, and I just want to be watching to find out.
Wow. Okay. 8 games left. They're 3-6. They probably have to go 6-2 to have any hope.
And that's possible, right?
And it is possible.
And that's why it's interesting.
I'm looking at the schedule. Cardinals, Colts, Seahawks, Dolphins. I mean, that is sort of like 4 teams around the median of the entire NHL. So you have to clear a bar, but it's not an impossible bar. That's the next 4.
And that's
Jaguars.
Exactly.
Jaguars, Rams, excuse me, Bills, Dolphins to close. So
there could be a, like, you could be all back in and just to get it ripped from your hands. So that's why I think the Jets are interesting.
Okay. I'll give you that because it does feel like they're going to get themselves back into it. And then I don't think it'll be enough.
How many more primetime games do they have? Because they can't watch anymore.
It's probably nonstop. We got a 420, 820. We got at least 2 that are going to be in a prominent position.
Okay.
We have time for my
You got one more. And then we'll bring in Shane in a minute.
Okay. I will go then with, I'll go with the Denver Nuggets.
Okay.
The Denver Nuggets look like they might be a bad team, despite being, 16 months removed from winning an NBA title. They still have the best player in the league. I think that's very, very clear in the first couple weeks here that Nikola Jokic is still that guy in the NBA. But his supporting cast is completely eroded, and it looks like he's going to have to do it all himself.
Yep.
And if he does it all himself, then he might put himself in a position to win his 4th NBA MVP, which would put him in, like, the pantheon of all-time greats who have done that. So Jokic has individual stakes on the line here, but I think they are most representative of a new reality in the NBA where it's really, really hard to keep a good team together, and seeing the best player in the NBA have his franchise kind of fail him in this regard. They're only, I think they're 2-2.
They could have been 0-4. They had two overtime to get the victories, which is crazy.
Like, they are teetering the edge of being like awful, and only the superhero contributions of Jokic is keeping them afloat right now.
He's still throwing up 40-point nights.
So I want to see. I want to see if he can keep doing it. I want to see what it means to the team, and I want to see how it like shapes the conversation in the NBA. Where it's not great to see a once great team fall off the face of the earth. And Jamal Murray, from a Canadian perspective, like. Is he cooked? Can he still play? I think that's very interesting.
You can tell that was like probably next for me because I had all that written down too. Yeah, the idea that they're just wasting maybe Jokic's prime. Like, he's 29 years old. He's got MVPs galore. But like, you're for what at this point? Because they just don't look like they have it. The Jamal thing is tough. It looks bad. But you have Jokic in his prime, and you're not able to. To get out of it. It's still, as we said, they're 2-2. I have another team that in my NBA pick is a team that is not 2-2. They're 1-4. I think they're in a worse spot and maybe a more surprising spot, but we'll save that. We'll keep taking your texts at 590-590. The most interesting team across sports, and I see a lot of people saying like, oh, well, you know, the Chiefs, because they're 7-0, like you can totally put it in that perspective. Like,
I think they're
very interesting. They're going for a three-peat. How can they not be interesting? But make sure you give us a reason. Don't just say, you know, the sense.
Sure.
Tell me why. We can read a couple of those as well. But we can cycle those through throughout the rest of the show. Send us in at 590-590. We'll get to it in a bit. We're going to bring in Shayna Goldman of The Athletic to talk about the NHL slate and this weekend. And Shayna, we appreciate you jumping on. How's it going?
It's going well. Thanks for having me.
We just talked about the Boston Bruins, and I think I'm not putting words in your mouth when you said that they are frauds. we're doing a little draft here as our show goes on about the most interesting teams in sports, and you can take that as positive interesting or negative interesting. And I had them number one because I think this seems to be so not characteristic of the Boston Bruins, and I just wonder for you, where do you think you start to determine the factors for why the Bruins are technically the bottom of the Atlantic and just not looking like themselves?
Yeah, right. Like, how many times have we seen a Bruins roster and go, you know, this doesn't look like peak Bruins anymore. That center depth, it's really suspect. And then they just pull it off, right? Even to start last year, they looked really suspect at 5-on-5 and they weren't winning games in a dominant fashion. They went to overtime a lot, but it was fine. They made the playoffs. Like, they did what they needed to do to an extent. This year, you look at it and you say, 5-on-5 play is pretty dreadful. And here it is. They come in with a lot of upgrades, and especially at that center position that they needed. They brought in Elias Lindholm. They brought in Zadorov. And neither of those players are clicking the way I think the Bruins anticipated, or maybe the players anticipated, but it's not just them. You know, Charlie McAvoy struggling and Hampus Lindholm struggling. You see that Pastrnak and Lindholm aren't clicking. So it seems like 5-on-5 is the biggest area of weakness. And I think that's trickling into the rest of their game, right? Because the goaltending struggling as a result of what they're doing in front of the net, the special teams, they don't seem to have the confidence to really do anything and get out of this early season funk. So it's definitely concerning for them.
We got the Islanders and Sabres tonight on Sportsnet. News today that Matt Barzal out with an upper body injury. These two teams are in difficult spots right now. The Islanders have won 3 total playoff games since back-to-back Eastern Conference final appearances. Sabres' longest playoff drought in the league. It could be said that one's on the way up, one's on the come down just a little bit. But if you had to pick one with a better future outlook, which way are you leaning?
Absolutely, positively, the Sabres. You can tell that the Sabres are going to have a better future, I think, just by the young core that they have, right? The Islanders don't have many young players. They don't draft very well. They haven't kept many of their draft picks, and they've locked themselves into a ton of contracts that are not going to age well. Signing Pierre Engvall for 7 years was a mistake. Signing Scott Mayfield for 7 years was a mistake. And while you could easily say, well, they're really small cap hits, it does add up after a while, and you're not replacing them with these young up-and-coming players. Yes, they have Sorokin for another, you know, 8 years, and he's amazing. And yes, they have Noah Dobson, but what are you going to do around that team? It just doesn't seem like the future has been in view at all. They've been thinking about the right now and bet on it so much, and the right now just underwhelms so much, you know, compared to the Sabres, where they have a lot of young talent, where you see that future. They'll eventually get there, in theory.
We also have the Flames and Devils, return of Jacob Markstrom in that one. The Devils have back-to-back victories after a little skid. The Flames suddenly have lost four in a row. I was on Flames Island. Now I might be the only person on
Flames. It might be
Flames.
Our fault because we interviewed Craig Conroy,
yeah,
and then
really
they've
bad,
lost every game since.
Really bad since. So is this just a case of reality hitting the Flames for you, Shayna?
Or are you guys jinxing them? I don't know.
So. But,
I think it's reality to an extent. You know, we know they're playing the long game. They made all the tough decisions they needed to last year. And they got off to a hot start, which I think is great. And it shows that they have that in them. But I wouldn't have expected that across an entire season. It's about, you know, retooling on the fly or rebuilding, however they want to frame it. I know every team is, like, careful about what they say and, you know, what the actual term is of their process. But, you know, the future is definitely getting brighter in Calgary, and they have some really interesting up-and-coming players, and you see guys like Connor Zary doing well, and, you know, that is definitely encouraging. But realistically, the best thing for them is to pick a direction and go with it, because the last thing they could want is to be that, you know, 9 team in the West, and then they miss out on a high draft pick, and they miss out on the playoffs.
We'll stick with some Canadian teams here. The Winnipeg Jets, we just saw the Maple Leafs break their unbeaten streak, but I think the thing that surprised me the most was just the start for Kyle Connor. And I think the Winnipeg Jets in general get underappreciated or under talked about. And he's got 17 points in 10 games. And he's probably always been this guy, right? But maybe doesn't get the limelight or the media attention that he deserves. What is it about his game that's got him off to a hot start? And people are even saying maybe Hart Trophy candidate for Kyle Connor.
That would be something, because he really is such a skilled player. And you're right, he's totally underrated. You think of the great goal scorers in today's game, and your mind's going to go to Auston Matthews or Leon Draisaitl or David Pastrnak, and Connor's going to be a little bit lower on that list. Maybe it's because he doesn't have as much of a signature shot. I wonder if that's what does him in a little bit, either that or the defense. It's one or the other, because I remember the years where we were talking about Leon Draisaitl's defense more than his goal scoring too. Kyle Connor and Mark Scheifele, really, they're not great defensive players. We know that. They have those flaws to their game. As long as they can outdo themselves offensively, I think that they'll be fine. And we're seeing that in the early goings of the year for Connor. The defense still needs a lot of work, but the goal scoring's there. And what makes him so special is that he can score goals in so many different ways. You know, if you look at goal scorers above expectations or by shot type, by expectations, generally a bunch of players will emerge. You'll see Auston Matthews is really good with his wrist shot, or you'll see that for Tage Thompson or David Pastrnak with his slap shot. Connor doesn't always jump out on those lists because he scores goals in so many different ways every single year. So I think that's one of the biggest weapons that he has, and that's what's helped his start.
You mentioned Draisaitl there. A lot of the conversation around Edmonton was, okay, Connor McDavid's out. It's time for Leon Draisaitl to do the thing where he elevates his game. And he once did that to win a Hart Trophy when McDavid was out. Generally, when a star player goes out, you can expect a bit of a bump and then maybe a bit of a letdown. But did you see some positives from the Oilers last night in terms of a lasting effect without McDavid and then with once he comes back?
Leon Draisaitl just loves to play in Nashville. It's become a pattern for him there. He has a really great record against the Predators, so that definitely helps get your confidence going. But if he can take over and be the guy, that's going to be huge for Edmonton, because everybody knows how great Connor McDavid is and that he can win a game for a team in 2 seconds flat, right? He just puts on the Jets, scores an amazing goal, and it's like the Oilers are right back in it. If they can figure out how to get going without him, I think that'll be pretty huge, because once you put him back in the lineup, everyone's automatically that much better. So this time will be good to see just how much Draisaitl can drive his own line and be the star of a team, how Arvidsson fits into the top six, because his start was a little slower than expected when he seemed on paper like a perfect fit to play alongside Draisaitl. And it's going to give someone like Jeff Skinner a chance to play in the top six as well. So it'll give them a better idea of what they have and what they still need to do once McDavid's back in the lineup. And maybe this is the spark that Ryan Nugent-Hopkins needs too, because I feel like he's gotten off to a really slow start. At 5-on-5, I'm kind of underwhelmed on both sides of the puck, and I don't think the scoring's there to kind of mask any of those underlying numbers that are a little bit, you know, eye-catching. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if him shifting to center and driving that line will get him going a little bit more too.
Where's Zach Hyman in all of this?
He's been so unlucky. I think going into Wednesday night, if I remember correctly, Evolving Hockey had him second in expected goal generation in all situations behind only Auston Matthews.
Wow.
He's generating those high danger chances and doing what he does best, but he had zero puck luck before last night. So I do wonder if that's just what he needed to, you know, get the monkey off his back and get going, because you know, he doesn't have the greatest finish in the world, but it generally is that he gets to the right areas. It's going to be a lot harder to do that without having Connor McDavid setting up all of his chances, but I think he's going to get back on the right track. I don't think it's going to be this extreme regression of his shooting percentage and we see him score, you know, 15 goals below expected. That happened to him in 22-23. So last year felt like a correction for that. I think we'll find him somewhere in the middle. Like, I still think he can get somewhere in the 40-goal range and kind of recalibrate the expectations we have.
So the Hart Trophy conversation, that doesn't, it's not really happening in earnest, but it does get a little bit more interesting, or we can start that conversation because Connor McDavid is the guy who's always at least the placeholder there, and now he's going to miss a couple weeks here despite, you know, he's back on skates. So maybe earlier than expected. But is there a Hart Trophy level start from someone happening right now in the NHL? Like, it could be someone who doesn't project to be there at the end of the day, but when you look around the league in the absence of McDavid, who could step into that position and be there when McDavid does come back?
So I think we have a couple long-term options emerging, and that's the Quinn Hugheses of the world. I think he's the one player in Vancouver consistently going. Jake Ottinger has been outstanding for Dallas, today aside. Igor Shesterkin has been the difference for the Rangers. And those are the three names that I think we could see all year. The name that we're seeing right now that I doubt will be there at the end of the year, and it's no fault to him, is Lucas Dostal. He has been unbelievable to start this season. The Ducks are hanging around in games they have no business being in because of him. He has been the difference night after night, despite facing the toughest or one of the toughest workloads among all goalies in terms of shots and quality chances against. Do I think he can keep that up? Probably not. And it's nothing about him, because he has not played a true starting workload. It's just that workload, I think, is going to wear on him because the Ducks are so bad defensively. And even if they make incremental improvements, I don't think it'll be enough for him to be a superstar across, you know, 60 starts at this point. But he gets the award, I think, for October alone.
I love that. And you had a great article at The Athletic. Everyone can check out some learnings from October, or, like, you know, 1 month in, things can change. But we appreciate a little check-in with you, Shayna. Have a great weekend, and we'll definitely chat with you soon.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. Shayna Goldman of The Athletic, you can check her work out there, and great on Twitter as well.
A couple goaltenders there. Could be a hot Vezina race.
Yeah, get your futures bets
Ottinger
ready.
And Dostal.
Dostal. Remember, Dostal was the one that...
Yeah, what was it, like,
surprise
a 55 saves versus the Leafs? And they finally
like,
got him,
who
I think,
is this
in overtime.
Guy?
And
then, all right, well, my best bet for tonight has to do with a goaltender as well. We were both aligned on this, so I actually took it from you. It is a Devils -1.5 on the puck line, +136 against Calgary. Markstrom playing for the Devils back in Calgary, and we talked about it. We apologize to the Calgary Flames fans. We had Craig Conroy on, and they have not been good since.
Yeah.
He's just distracted about how good our interview was. So they have been on a little bit of a downward spiral. So I'm going to bet the better team, the Devils, to win by at least 1.5 goals.
Yeah, it's okay, though. If you start out as hot as they did, you can have that spiral, and you can still be right in the thick of things as the Flames are. So maybe they can bounce back tonight despite the Markstrom presence and the Devils playing some good hockey right now. As mentioned, Lakers and Raptors on Sportsnet 590 The Fan tonight at 7:30. We're going to tee up the game with Smith and Jones at 7 on with you until 7:30. I do think, though, despite, you know, the celebratory nature that is this season and bringing LeBron and his son into Scotiabank Arena, I think it's going to be a Lakers night. Lakers have lost 2 in a row. Bounce back opportunity, I think, here against an undermanned, and that's the theme of this Raptors season so far. Raptors team without Scotty Barnes, Kelly Olynyk, go down the list. The Raptors are dealing with it right now. Emmanuel Quickley still out. We will see Jacoby Walter, we believe, for the first time. But, you know, if you're giving Jacoby Walter a bunch of minutes in his first game against LeBron James, it could be a Lakers night. So I like the Lakers to bounce back after a tough couple games. They had a really good start, but they've hit the skids kind of like the Flames just a little bit. I think they get back to it tonight, improve to 4-2 and beat the Raptors handily.
All right. We said we're taking your text in at 590-590. What's the most interesting team for you right now in sports? On a wild guess, what do you think the most common answer is right now?
I would say the Leafs are probably.
Not one person has said the Maple Leafs.
Really? Okay.
And we've got like 50 texts.
50 texts.
This team also wears blue. They play a different sport.
Dallas Cowboys?
Yeah. Same sport, but...
Oh, same sport as hockey?
No, the Lions.
Oh, the Lions. Oh, same sport.
Everybody loves the Lions.
Interesting.
In the text line.
Do you think Do you think they're interesting?
Yes.
Are they on
I
your
think
list?
They could be in the Super Bowl. Well, no, because my list was more negative.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I have some positive ones in there.
What happened to you today? It's a
I don't know. I just want to watch things combust.
Okay, so just to recap, and we'll do more of this draft. You have the Bruins and Jets. I have the Ravens and Nuggets as our most interesting teams. We'll finish this up later.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan pregame, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 590, the Fan. Tomorrow, we've got UFC Fight Night Edmonton prelims at 6, main card at 8. That's on Sportsnet 360, and we're going to send it all the way to Edmonton for our favorite guy, Bronny, Aaron Bronstetter of Sportsnet, joining us. We're hoping for more chaos, you know? Like, I know you got a mic, and I know you got people around you, Bronny. You just stick that in someone's face.
Yeah, if anybody comes into the picture, we'll make sure that we interview them here because that's the way we do here on the Fan Pregame.
Oh, yeah, that's what we do. We live for the chaos when you are about 24 hours out from a fight night. So just let us know if anything's going on and we will cede the floor. But let's talk about this card because, you know, 10 months ago-ish, we were all in the same building, Scotiabank Arena. The Canadian men went 0-7. Oof. Canadian women, though, 2-0, but it was a rough night for Canada, 2-7 on the night. A lot of Canadians, a lot of the same fighters in Edmonton for this weekend. Should we expect a better showing from the Canadian athletes?
I absolutely think we should expect a better showing from the Canadian fighters. I think that everybody this week seems really dialed in. It's not like they're not typically dialed in, but there's just an aura around a lot of the fighters on this card where they just seem so ready to put on a show. This is the first fight night card that the UFC has brought to Canada in 5+ years. First time it's been back in Edmonton in 5+ years. The Rogers Place Arena is just a beautiful state-of-the-art arena. I think the Canadians are really going to bring their A game tomorrow night.
Okay, that sounds good to us. Mike Malott is our Sportsnet teammate, and Mike Malott. It was kind of the headliner from a Canadian perspective at UFC 297, but it was a pretty devastating third round finish for Neil Magny against Malott. He definitely gassed in that fight. He didn't have enough to go all three rounds, and it cost him. Has his approach changed? What has he been talking about, and what has been the narrative around him as he looks to rectify past issues?
Absolutely, and we spoke this week about how painful it can be sometimes to do that sort of self-examination where you know that you had a great training camp, you put everything into it, and things still don't go your way. You know, Mike hasn't lost in a long time prior to that fight against Neil Magny. He's typically been the hammer and not the nail, and he was the hammer for 2+ rounds of that fight. And then once Neil Magny got on top, he was able to score the finish. But Mike has said he has found a lot of different holes in his game that he didn't previously notice and previously were undetected in his game, and that was a real learning experience for him against a guy like Neil Magny, ranked veteran fighter. I think Trevin Giles is a little bit of an easier assignment for him tomorrow night, and I think that Mike has learned a lot about himself through this process, and we're going to see a much better Mike Malott tomorrow night.
Justin mentioned it. The women were 2-0. We got Jasmine, maybe Canada's best prospect, fighting again, heavy favorite tomorrow. What are your expectations for her?
I was actually talking about you guys the other day and mentioned that the first fight that you guys had seen in person was Jasmine just beating the absolute tar out of her opponent.
It was crazy, Aaron.
For three rounds. Yeah. Like, that was your first taste of, like, being, like, feet from the octagon and seeing Jasmine get in seven rounds, which are so unorthodox and unlikely in MMA. And I think Jasmine, this is a really tough test for her ranked opponent, someone ranked one spot above her in the flyweight rankings in Ariane Da Silva. But I think that Jasmine is a really good matchup for Da Silva here, or vice versa, really. I think that Jasmine's pressure is going to give Da Silva a lot of problems. We've seen her, when she's been pressured by fighters in the past, sometimes buckle. She's been knocked out 4 times in her UFC career, and Jasmine seems like she is really coming into her own as a UFC fighter right now. Got a late start in terms of becoming a professional fighter, and I think that has kind of helped her, because I think that her mind right now at 35, 36 years of age is right where it should be, where her body doesn't have the same sort of miles as a fighter that would be that age typically would have. So I think that she's got a really solid matchup here tomorrow night.
Okay, so the top male prospect in Malott, top female prospect in Jasmine Jasdevicius, I believe is how we say her last name. Is there another Canadian we need to watch this weekend?
Well, my other Sportsnet contemporary, Eamon Zahabi's on quite the win streak, and I think that Pedro Munoz is somebody who had been ranked in the bantamweight division for a long time. I think this is the deepest and toughest division in the sport, and for Eamon to go on a win streak in the way he has earlier this year, he had a win as a 7-1 underdog against Javid Basharat, and it looks like everything is just firing on all cylinders right now for Eamon. He's somebody that you absolutely have to watch tomorrow night against Pedro Munoz. That's a really, really great fight overall. If you can get a win over Pedro Munoz, you look at the guys that have done that in the past, they all end up rising into the top 10 for the most part.
Main event does not feature a Canadian. It features a former champ, though, in Brendan Moreno. I read that he kind of had one foot out the door, one foot out of the octagon, maybe, after his last fight, after his last loss, and now he's back in a main event. What's the narrative and storyline around him entering tomorrow night?
I think he was a little bit mentally checked out after being a champion and all of the different obligations that come with being a champion. He really had to find a way to reconnect with his roots in the sport. And I think he was a little bit burnt out. But in this situation against Amir Albazi, Albazi's actually had more time away from the octagon than Brandon Moreno. So this is going to be a really tough matchup for both these guys to kind of get their feet back on the ground at the very highest level of the division. Now, I do have a special guest for us here on the Fan Pregame. Very special guest. The Senior Vice President of Content and International, David Shaw, and anything that happens in Canada, this man has his hands on. He's somebody who's done a really good job of being an advocate, in fact, a Canadian himself for the sport. So, Dave, it's great to have a fight night back in Canada. It's been some time, and back in Edmonton. It seems like this is a fight that so far has done very well at the box office.
Yeah, I mean, we're expecting full standing room only. I mean, this is going to be like, you know, the Cup run last June. Be full house. It's been sort of sold out for a few weeks. We re-released some tickets over the last few days as we've got into the venue and got a good understanding of where we can open up some seats, but it's going to be awesome.
I've heard we might have some Oilers in the house.
There will be some Oilers. You know, I think last time or maybe two times that we were here ago, we had 97. I think we've got Vander Kane coming. There's a few guys that are going to come. I think the fact that I think they play in Calgary on Sunday. So it's an opportune time for these guys to come and see the other form of, you know, sanctioned fighting.
Well, we'll see if 97 makes an appearance. I know he's sidelined right now, so maybe that is what ends up happening. And the UFC's done a really good job at the box office with fight nights, breaking records. St. Louis, a fight that happened fairly recently, had the record. Is there a chance that this card breaks the record on Saturday?
Yeah, there's going to be some sort of record broken. You know, Dana, he's the guy that wants to release those. So we'll wait to see like how far we get in the next couple of days, and he'll probably have something on Saturday.
All right, well, it's been 5 years since the UFC's been in Edmonton, but it's been even longer since it's been to some other cities in Canada, Winnipeg, Montreal. What are some potential cities that we could see the UFC visit in 2025 and 2026?
Yeah, Winnipeg, Montreal. I mean, we've been looking at Ottawa. We want to get back to Halifax. You know, we want to have a pay-per-view, one fight night, maybe two fight nights next year. We're trying to figure out the 2025 schedule. It's been a long time since Montreal. We'd love to be back there. We've got a number of Quebecois fighters who are competing tomorrow. You know, give us a few more weeks and we'll have something to announce.
All right, well, hypothetically, if this fight night card does break the record on Saturday night for the gate, can you commit right now to two fight night cards in Canada next year?
I can't commit to anything right now, but you're going to get some time with Dana tomorrow, and he's the best guy to answer those types of questions. Listen, I mean, Alberta has always been a massive market for us. You know, per capita, most fans here. We've got, you know, a huge bar business, big pay-per-view business. Obviously, the support that you guys give 365 in the region is huge for us. We are honored every time we come to Alberta. Calgary and Edmonton have been great destinations for us. It won't be long until we're back.
On the Fan Pregame, they always tell me to ask the really hard-hitting questions and try to get commitments from our guests. So, I wanted to see if we could maybe get something, a little bit verbally agreed upon.
Bit of fool's errand, you know, talking to me.
This main event, Brandon Moreno against Amir Albazi, they just asked me about that. I didn't really get a chance to elaborate on it. Tell me what you think of this main event.
Action-packed, dynamic, like nonstop. I think these guys are going to come right at it. They've both got like an incredible body of work in the competitors that they've faced in the last, say, five fights, and indeed throughout their entire careers. There's something about Moreno and just his shiftiness. I think they're going to put on a show, and don't overlook the co-main event. We've got, you know, two competitors, like, you know, one who's sort of striving to get to that position to compete for the belt, one that's had it a couple times and knows what it takes to get there. Rose is like a cult hero. you know, the number of fans that are around the world that she has, it's no different in Canada. So I think the crowd's going to be equally behind the Canadians as they are for the co-main and the main event.
Now tell me if you agree with this. This is something I've been saying this week, is if you look at the Toronto card, the pay-per-view, and you look at this card compares favorably to it. You've got two championship caliber fights at the top, both five-round fights, a former champion, Rose Namajunas, former champion, Brandon Moreno, plus Derek Lewis, who has really only been headlining fight night cards for the last 5 or 6 years now on the main card. Do you agree with that, that this card kind of compares favorably to a fight that was a pay-per-view earlier this year in Canada?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. You look at the depth of the card. It's nice to have 8 Canadians on this card. It's also nice to have a number of ranked fighters. As you said, two five-round fights in the co-main and the main event. You know, put a belt on top of it, it could be absolutely a pay-per-view card. And to be honest, it's what, you know, Edmonton deserves. I mean, when we come to Edmonton, which we've done twice, it's been two pay-per-views, and the destination for the UFC and the support that we get from the venue and different stakeholders here in the city, again, it's not going to be too long until we're back.
Well, Dave, always appreciate your time. Do you want to say goodbye to our wonderful hosts, Ailish and Justin, back in Toronto?
Absolutely. Well, hopefully, well, I mean, this guy's made it out here. How come you guys didn't?
Yeah, that we're working
on
it.
That's a tough question.
That, that is a tough question.
They said they're working on it. Right on.
Thank you so much.
Right, Dave, thank you so much.
Bronny,
appreciate it, guys.
Hey, we still got you, Bronny, or no?
Yeah, you still got me.
Oh, yeah. We just want to say congrats on that. Was a great interview. We just want to chat with you for a minute, can we?
We need one more. We just need one cage lock before we let you go.
All right. Oh, okay. I got you. Yeah. I think Mike Malott inside the distance. I think that Mike is going to get a finish on Saturday. I think it's around minus 125 right now, and I think that is a very likely outcome of that fight.
Okay. Well, thanks for your time. Thanks for your interviewing skills. We just took a quick nap, and we're back to host the rest of the show. So thanks, Bronny.
Well, I'm glad you guys will have the energy to get through the rest of it, and I'll pat myself on the back for that. Thank you, guys. Always appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, of course. Enjoy this weekend. That's Aaron Bronstetter of Sportsnet at UFC Fight Night Edmonton. Just hijacking the show, killing it with Dave Shaw, UFC executive there. As we mentioned, at prelims at 6 tomorrow on Sportsnet 360, main card at 8, also on Sportsnet 360. A lot of Canadians. It's at Rogers Place, maybe even 97 in attendance. Bronny's.
Yeah, interesting. Like, because the Battle of Alberta's, we're
going
to get to that actually in a second. Mm-hmm. Next day, I guess it's probably, well, not probably, because I believe it is in Calgary, so it doesn't matter anyway, but it's going to be difficult for Oilers to be attendance, but Evander Kane would be one that doesn't necessarily have to
be. Well, if you're going from Edmonton to Calgary, do you think they just fly day of?
They can't. No, you can't fly day of. You're a former collegiate athlete.
Buddy, like, you want to talk about,
there's no chance
cutting costs?
The Oilers are going to hang out and watch a UFC fight and fly the next day.
How else would
Evander Kane's hurt, so he's going.
Yeah.
And there's probably someone else who's not going to be playing on Sunday night that'll go.
Okay. I didn't know because I was listening, trying to think if there's current players or he was more hinting at players that are not in the lineup.
A little LTIR outing.
You think we went the night before to every game? Are you kidding me?
You said you never traveled game day.
You
did once and you hated it.
We've had this discussion. No. In college we didn't because the NCAA is rich.
That's what I was.
But when I played professionally, that was like cutting costs. You'd be driving yourself to the rink.
Yeah, I mean, you get yourself there. Like tonight.
I got a big beer league game tonight. Go Cudas.
No team bus there.
No team bus. All right. Okay, do we want to wrap up anything? UFC, we're good. Everyone's got it. We know how to do it.
Yeah, I think we're okay. Fabulous. We know where to find it, and we know where to find all of Aaron Bronstetter's plays on sportsnet.ca.
Yes. Okay, so we can do a little bit of our most interesting teams, and then we have our favorite way to wrap up a Friday night with our game to watch. So you want to go back to our most interesting teams?
Yeah, let's do it. It'll be round three. You got the Bruins and Jets. I have the Ravens and Nuggets as our most interesting teams right now after the World Series has concluded.
Most interesting teams. You can use the word interesting however you would like. And we're not picking MLB teams because they are not playing currently, even though they might have interesting off seasons. I am going to go. I like the way I've done this so far. NHL, Bruins, football, Jets, basketball, Milwaukee Bucks.
Really?
Yep. 1-4. They're literally at the bottom of the East. And the reason why is Giannis might want out. This is going to be maybe the last season that Giannis plays as a Buck. I think, and I was listening to J.D. Bunkus and Michael Grange on his show today, and Grange said, like, I wouldn't bet against him not being a Buck after this year, and it's going to be very, very interesting to see where Giannis goes. You know, it's a small-ish market. Where does he want to go play? For the Golden State Warriors, which is something that Grange said. Does he want to come to Toronto where we embrace him every time he comes out? I think that maybe the timelines are off there, but that's a big deal. Like, the Bucks have fallen off. They lost huge to the Grizzlies last night, and it just doesn't look cohesive. So once again, I'm picking a team that is a tire fire in my interesting teams to watch. And I think the Bucks, just like you said with the Nuggets, there's a lot of eyeballs around them for ways of, like, how are you going to get yourself out of this? How are you going to build around some of the greatest basketball players in the league that I don't have the support around them? So I see a lot of parallel between the Nuggets and the Bucks. The Nuggets and the Bucks for me were kind of like, whatever one you didn't take, I was going to take the other one. So for me, I'm going to go with Milwaukee.
Okay. Yeah. The team that has the most positive outlook on your list is the New York Jets. So that says a lot about where your interest lies.
Yeah. I guess, I don't know. I might need to look into that deeper.
You may. I'll go your route here, where I'm going to try to touch on every league. And I think we are overlooking the interesting nature of Canadian NHL teams. I'm going to go with the Edmonton Oilers. They've clearly had a very bad start, but not unlike, actually, it's better than last year's start. And they had an incredible close, incredible comeback that falls just one game short. The Edmonton Oilers are, to me, the most interesting team in hockey, and will remain that way because Connor McDavid is going to miss the next couple weeks here. So can they not only tread water, but get themselves back into a favorable position? If you lose a bunch of games off the bat, it means that you've got to win more than everybody else is winning over the last couple months of the season, 4 or 5 months of the season in the case of the Oilers here with back-to-back bad starts. If they fail to do that without Connor McDavid, it could be disaster time, or it could be savior time for Connor McDavid, who comes back and drags them all the way back into a playoff spot and puts them in a position where they could go back to the Stanley Cup final and do what everyone in this building expected them to do, which is to win the Stanley Cup this year after coming one win short. So the Oilers, the Oilers are always interesting, it seems, because they make themselves interesting with these starts. And they're more interesting now that McDavid is out. They should be uninteresting. They should be a team that just wins a bunch of games in the regular season and returns to the playoffs in really good shape, but they never set themselves up that way. So they're going to be one team to watch because they don't have much of a margin for error when you don't start a season very well, and that's what they've tended to do.
And they've got a big weekend ahead, and we're going to get to that in 1 minute. Let me do one more team first of my choice.
Let's do one each.
Okay. I'm going to go positive, and I'm going to go with the Detroit Lions.
Okay.
And they are, for me, one of the most interesting teams because, A, I like actually watching them. The three teams I just named, I didn't like watching them, but I liked watching them almost like a hate watch where you're like, oh, this is going to be good. When I watch the Lions, this is going to be good. I love their style of play. I love watching them play football almost more than my Bills. And I think the reason that they're so interesting is because it really feels like this could be the year things are like laying nicely in their favor, and we'll do more Super Bowl predictions down the road. But I just, like, they've won 5 in a row. They're 6-1. They look like they're getting the puzzle pieces together. I think Detroit has a very similar fan base to, like, you know, I'm a Bills fan, so I kind of relate to the way that the fans would feel if they were to be successful, if they were to make a run, if they were to finally get over the hump. They're fun. Their coach is amazing. Their team is energetic. Like, they play a very aesthetic style of football, and I want it for them to be a year that is worth it, right? Worth buying into and believing in. So I'm going to put the Lions as one of the most interesting teams, my fourth across sports, and I hope it continues that way.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I'm 10 weeks away from having any real interest in them because it's playoff
success.
Been
too good so far.
Playoff success or bust. Like, they've already, you know, they've lost 2 games, I think, already, or just one. Either way, it's not like they're on a Chiefs trajectory where it's like, oh, can they run the table here?
And, like, can they go 3-0? Yeah.
They're not in that position. Like, all their success is going to be determined when we get back to the playoffs. I'm going to be immensely interested in them when we reach that point. But now I think they're just going to, you know, win a bunch of games, be in a really great position.
Yeah, you know what? I kind of regret that pick, but it's okay.
It's okay.
Because I have three other football teams that I think might be more interesting.
The Chiefs, to me, are more interesting. They'll be my fourth pick.
Okay.
It could be an all-time season for them, despite it feeling
like they're not that
like
good.
Somewhat mediocre. Yeah, at least offensively, this has been relative mediocrity. They have suffered a million injuries, and yet they still keep winning. Patrick Mahomes' numbers are really pedestrian, and yet this could be the best Chiefs season that he's had, at least a regular season. And then you have to have the MVP debate where if they go 17-0, and no team's gone 17-0, obviously, because now we're now playing 17 games, do you just have to give it to him despite his stats being very, very mid? I don't know the answer to that, but I'd like to find out. Andy Reid has never won Coach of the Year. He's someone that is generally not celebrated at the extent that he should. I guess he would win Coach of the Year in that sense, and that's not really the most important thing. The most important thing is, hey, can this team go undefeated? If they keep winning, they're going to remain unbelievably interesting. Mm. One loss, and they're kind of not interesting. But for now, 7-0 with winnable games on the schedule, I'm interested. I want to see if the Chiefs can do this.
Okay, I have a few more, and we are going to take a break in about 5 minutes and come back on the radio and do Sportsnet 590 The Fan, a pregame chat here with the boys down before Smith and Jones do the call for Raptors-Lakers. So we'll have a little bit of time around 7:15 to finish up. But I think I have three more NFL teams at least, one more NBA team, and maybe an NHL team to throw in there. So we can sprinkle those
in.
Do
some honorable mentions.
And we've got our text line open to 590-590. And I've been reading through a couple of them, and there's some reoccurring thoughts through our listeners. It's like they're connected. But before we say goodbye on a Friday night, it's now time for Game to Watch, brought to you by Budweiser Canada. Budweiser is telling men the time for excuses is over. 75% of men report seeing their friends less, up 6% from last year at the Budweiser Friendship Survey, the beer known for bringing buds together. Oversport is setting out a plan to end the friendship recession with its rallying cry. Make time for hockey, not excuses. Men making excuses. I do it myself, too, so it's not just a man problem. But, Justin, what's an excuse that you have used or heard?
Okay, so
your friendship circle.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hearing excuses all the time because, again, this is a major, major problem. A recent one was, well, I'll ask you this question. How long does it take to, like, someone's having a baby, whether it's a male or a female, the baby? Like, how long is it to, how long does it take to disseminate that information?
Like when it comes
like
out?
Like a gender reveal. How long, what's that moment in time? It's a split second?
4 seconds?
Probably shouldn't take an entire weekend, right?
No, it should not.
And yet, last time we were having a little get-together or planning a get-together, I was told a gender reveal would keep them out of action for the entire weekend. That seems like a bit of a stretch. It seems like an excuse. You could probably attend a gender reveal and be out of there in a half hour?
Especially like it could be a party.
Could be a party, but it doesn't have to take the whole weekend.
No. Unless they were doing what that one couple did where they went to California and they burned down a forest. Like,
exactly.
None of that.
And then you're taking, you know, a full weekend to clean up the mess from said gender reveal. So I think gender reveal ultimately was
most of the time
excuse.
You just take a bite of a piece of a cupcake and
exactly.
Then you know, boy or girl.
Awesome. Congratulations. Now we're going to go hang out with the buds. Gender reveal, I think, is a bit of an excuse. Despite being like a legitimate thing to go to attend. Mm. For it to take you out of the weekend, I think that's an excuse, and it's something that shouldn't be used when buds are taking time to spend time together.
I agree. That's one I haven't heard yet, but my friends aren't in the baby stage. They're in the marriage stage, so when that happens, I'll let you know. I'll be sure to call
them call
out.
It out right away.
I'll be like, no, I know that one. All right, so with all this in mind, we're selecting a game for you to get together with your buds this week, and that game is...
The Battle of Alberta, we mentioned
nice.
It. It may hit different on a Sunday. Usually it's a Saturday night event, the Battle of Alberta, but with, well, again, it's not at Rogers Place. It's going to be at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome, but Battle of Alberta is going to be must-see
Sunday
appointment
night.
Viewing regardless of day. And to have it on Sunday night is just a little treat after
treat.
A Halloween weekend. So, yeah, the Oilers, we know they need victories. The Flames, maybe they're not desperate for victories, but they'd like to turn things around because the vibe a week ago was amazing. Now, not so much. So, Battle of Alberta, always interesting.
Can't miss.
You know, it's a big weekend in Alberta in terms of sports with the UFC in Edmonton. So, yeah, Battle of Alberta, can't miss.
Perfect. All right, that was our game to watch, brought to you by Budweiser, an official beer of the NHL in Canada. Okay. 2 minutes.
We got Raptors Lakers on the other
Raptors,
side.
Raptors Lakers. And Bronny is here in the city. We've seen photo evidence of him. I think I've seen 1,000 photos on my Twitter timeline during the last hour.
Getting some shots up.
And it's too bad because there's no Scotty. And this is a big process of learning what Scotty and Quickly and RJ could do together.
There's no IQ either.
And you're missing two of those three. But I think it's been really awesome to see some of these young guys have their moment. That's what we're going to cling on to. Like, if you want to watch Raptors basketball, you're going to see a lot of Grady Dick, and he's looked way better this year. You're going to see new guys like Jamal Shedd, who looks awesome. Like, he's got that fierce energy that when you watch him, you're like, I like this guy. This guy can be like a culture setter. So there's a lot of things that maybe weren't the headline items.
And a little pressure on Jacoby Walter, because he's the guy that the Raptors used a first-round pick, and Jamal Shedd, who was picked up after him. has been the one that's stealing the headlines, at least to start, and the one guy that's like, oh yeah, we see a future here with Jamal Shedd for sure. So we'll see if Jacoby Walter in his first opportunity with the Raptors can make a similar sort of impact. That's just the reality of the Raptors season now, is we're looking towards that, but you know, we could find some silver linings.
And tomorrow is the Vince Carter jersey celebration in retirement in Toronto. So a big weekend ahead. And Air Canada and Vince have like an airplane together. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. And Smith and Jones could weigh in.
And Paul Jones is there.
I think if you got an airplane, that'd be pretty sick. That's going to be up there in terms of like retirement gifts. Like you get the silver stick. Now I want an airplane.
You want the decoration or you want the plane?
I'll take a plane. Okay. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll be up on Sportsnet 590 Fan. Have a great weekend.